Welcome to the Linux Guy Guru, and now your host, Jay Benjamin.
Hi, my name is Jay Benjamin. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Linux Guy Guru. Our topic for today's program is System Monitoring Tools in Ubuntu. In this broadcast, we will discuss console-based monitoring, graphical process and system management tools. We will also cover KDE process and system monitoring tools, so let's get started. To keep your system in optimum shape, you need to be able to monitor it closely. This is imperative in a corporate environment where uptime is vital and any system failure and downtime can be quite expensive. Whether it is checking processes for error daemons or keeping a close eye on CPU and memory usage, Ubuntu provides a wealth of utilities designed to give you as little or as much feedback as you want. This program looks at some of the basic monitoring tools along with some tactics designed to keep your system up longer. Some of the monitoring tools cover network connectivity, memory, and hard drive usage. And in this program, you'll learn how to manipulate active system processes using a mixture of graphical and command line tools. We'll first discuss console-based monitoring. Those familiar with Unix system administration already know the PS, or process display command commonly found on most flavors of Unix. Because of the close relationship between Linux and Unix, it also includes the command which enables you to see the current processes running on the system and who owns them and how resource hungry they are. Although the Linux kernel has its own distinct architecture and memory management, it also benefits from enhanced use of the /proc file system, the virtual file system found on many Linux flavors. Through the /proc file system, you can communicate directly with the kernel to get a deep view of what is currently happening. Developers tend to use the /proc file system as a way of extracting information from the kernel and for their programs to manipulate that information to human-readable formats. A full discussion of the /proc file system is beyond the scope of this broadcast. To get a better idea of what it contains, you can take a look at http://en.tldp.org/ldp/linux-filesystem-hiarchy/html/proc.html for an excellent and in-depth guide. These and other websites will be on the feature page on the show page notes. Processes can also be controlled at the command line, which is important because you might sometimes have only a command line interface. Whenever an application or command is launched, either from the command line or a clicked icon, the process that comes from the kernel is assigned an identification number called a process ID or a PID. This number is shown in the shell if the program is launched via the command line, example GEDIT. The second number line, example 9649, represents the PID. You can get a quick list of your processes by using the PS command. The /proc directory contains many files, some of which include constantly updated hardware information such as battery power levels and so on. Linux administration often pipes the output of PS through GREP to display information about a specific program. You can use the PID to stop a running process by using the shell built-in KILL kill command. This command asks the kernel to stop a running process and reclaim system memory. For example, to stop GEDIT, in this example, use the KILL command like this, KILL space 9656. After you press enter and then press enter again, the shell reports the following, terminated GEDIT. I will note here that users can kill only their own processes, but root can kill them all. Controlling any other running process requires root permission, which you should use judiciously, especially when forcing a kill by using the -9 option. By inadvertently killing the wrong process through a typo in the command, you could bring down an active system. Using the kill command to control processes. The kill command is a basic Unix system command. You can communicate with a running process by entering a command into its interface, such as when you type into a text editor. But some processes, usually system processes rather than application processes, run without such an interface, and you'll need a way to communicate with them as well, so you can use a system of signals. The kill system accomplishes that by sending a signal to a process, and you can use it to communicate with any process. The general format of the kill command is as follows: kill option PID. I would like to note here that if you're using kill on a process you do not own, you need to have super user privileges and preface the kill command with sudo. A number of signal options can be sent as words or numbers, but most of them are interest only to programmers. One of the most common is the one used previously to kill GEDIT, KILL PID. This tells the process with PID to stop. You can supply the actual PID. However, without a signal option, there is no guarantee that a process will be killed, because programs can catch, block, or ignore some terminate signals. And this is a good thing done by design. This includes a signal for kill that cannot be caught. 9 is the number of the SIGKILL signal. You can use this combination with the plain KILL kill shown previously does not work. Be careful. Using this does not allow a process to shut down gracefully, and shutting down gracefully is usually preferred because it closes things out that the process might have been using and ensures that things such as logs are written before the process disappears. Instead, try this first. Kill space -1 space PID. And this is the signal to hang up or stop and then clean up all associated processes, as well as the number 1 is the number of the SIGHUP, S-I-G-H-U-P signal. As you become proficient at process control and job control, you will learn the utility of a number of KILL options. You'll find a full list of signal options in the KILL man pages of your computer. Now I'll discuss using priority scheduling and control. Two useful applications included with Ubuntu are the NICE and RENICE commands. They are covered in one of our previous programs, Command Line Masterclass. Along with NICE, system administrators can also use the TIME time command to get an idea of how much time and what proportion of a system resources are required for a task, such as a shell script. Here, TIME time is used to measure the duration of elapsed time, the command line that deals with civil and sidereal time in the date command. This command is used with the name of another command or script as an argument, like this: sudo time -p find --name conky. Output of the command displays the time from start to finish, along with the user and system time required. Other factors you can query include memory, CPU usage, and file system input-output I/O statistics. See the TIME commands man pages for more details on this subject. In a previous program, we covered the TLP command, and I believe it's the Command Line Masterclass. It has some more even powerful cousins worth mentioning here. One option for monitoring resources usage called HTLP. It is not installed by default, but is available from the Ubuntu software repositories and is worth a minute or two of your consideration after you're familiar with TLP. And here are some of the differences. In HTLP, you can scroll the list vertically and horizontally to see all processes and complete command lines. In TLP, you are subject to a delay for each unassigned key you press, especially annoying when multi-key escape sequences are triggered by accident. HTLP starts faster. Top seems to collect data for a while before displaying anything. In HTLP, you don't need to type the process number to kill a process. In top, you do. In HTLP, you don't need to type the process number to kill a process. In TLP, you do. In HTLP, you don't need to type the process number or the priority value to RENICE, a process. In top, you do. HTOP supports mouse operation. TOP does not. TOP is older, hence more used and tested. I will note here, you can go to http://http.sourceforge.net for more details if you're interested. The site is also the source of the B-list of differences. I will now discuss displaying free and used memory with free. Although TOP includes some memory information, the free utility displays the amount of free and used memory in the system in kilobytes. The hyphen M switch displays in megabytes. Another useful system monitoring tool is VMSTAT, Virtual Memory Statistics. This command reports on processes, memory, input, output, and CPU, typically providing an average since the last reboot. Or you can make it report usage for a current period by telling it the time interval in seconds and the number of iterations you desire, like this. VMSTAT:5:10. This runs VMSTAT every 5 seconds for 10 iterations. Use the uptime command to see how long it has been since the last reboot and to get an idea of what the load average has been. Higher numbers mean higher loads. Next, we'll discuss disk space. Along with system load, it's important to keep an eye on the amount of free hard drive space that your computer has remaining. It is easy to do this mainly by using the df command. Here you can see each drive as mounted on your system, as well as the used space, the available space, the percentage of the total usage of the disk, and finally where it is mounted on your system. I'll now discuss disk quotas. Disk quotas are a way to restrict the usage of disk space either by user or by groups. Although rarely, if ever, used on a local or standalone workstation, quotas are definitely a way of life at the enterprise level of computing. Usage limits on disk space not only conserve resources, but also provide a measure of operational safety by limiting the amount of disk space any user can consume. For more on disk quotas, go to our program under Managing Users. Next, we'll discuss checking log files. Many of the services and programs that run in your computer save data in log files, typically data including success and error messages for processes that are attempted and lists of actions. Some of these log files are extremely technical, while others are easily read and parsed by regular users. If you know what you're looking for, most log files can be found in /var/log/ or its subdirectories. Typically, these logs can be used to learn more about something that happened recently. So most admins are interested in the most recent entries. In this case, using TAIL, it's common to read just the most recent 10 lines. Example, TAIL:VAR:LOG:BOOT.LOG. I will note here, for those who love graphic user interface applications, there is a log read installed by default in Ubuntu. Find system log in the dash to run it. It does not include every log in /VAR/LOG, but it does include the most important ones that serve the widest audience. I'll now discuss rotating log files. Log files are great, but sometimes they can get unwielded as time passes and more information is logged. Rotating log files prevents that problem. Rotating a log file means to archive the current log file, start a fresh log, and delete older log files. This means you always have a current log file to pursue previous log file, and that the log files never grow too large. Typically, log rotation is set up by administrator to happen nightly at a time when the system is not being heavily used. This is done with a utility call logrotate, log rotate, running as a CRON cron job, and which has been described in previous episodes in automating tasks and shell scripting. Ubuntu comes with log rotate installed. There is a cron job already set as well, and you can find the script at /etc/cron.daily/logrotate. This file is a bash script and looks like this. /1/bin/sh. Without getting too technical, don't worry if you don't yet understand everything in that script. You don't need to understand it to configure Log Rotate to do what you want it to do. I would like to note here the man page for Log Rotate defines all the commands used in these configuration files, but many are probably clear to you already. But here are some of the most important ones. Rotate will define how many archive logs are kept at one time. Interval defines how often to rotate the log. The actual setting will be daily, weekly, monthly, or yearly. Size defines how large a log file can become before it is rotated. This setting supersedes the time interval setting above, and the format will be a number and a unit, such as size 512K, or size 128M, or size 100G. Compress configures the log file to be compressed. No compress configures the log file not to be compressed. What is more important to cover here than all of the individual options, which you can look up in the man entry, is that these individual configuration files for specific applications will override the default settings in /etc/logrotate.conf. If the setting is assigned a value in that file, it will be used by all applications that log rotate affects unless an application specific file in /etc/logrotate.d includes the same setting. I'll now discuss graphical process and system management tools. The GNOME and KDE desktop environments offer a rich set of network and system monitoring tools. Graphical interface elements such as menus and buttons, and graphical output including metering and real-time load charts make these tools easy to use. These clients, which require an ActiveX session, and in some cases root permission, are included with Ubuntu. I'll now discuss System Monitor. You can find a graphical monitoring tool called System Monitor by searching the dash. This tool is informative, easy to use, and understand and very useful. It has tabs for information about your system, configuration, running processes, available resources, and local file systems. Another system monitoring tool that can be found in the software repositories is Conky. Conky is a highly configurable, rather complex system monitor that is light on system resources and can give you information about nearly anything. The downside is that you need to learn how to configure it. Simply installing Conky from the software repositories only gets you started. However, for those who want specific information displayed on a desktop at all times, it is invaluable and well worth the time it takes to figure it out. But to truly appreciate the power, flexibility, and possibilities of Conky, visit http://conkyhardcore.com/. Conky uses text files for configuration and is often started using a short script. Conky gives information about the kernel, the operating system, the host name of the system, and the current time and date. It continually updates with information on load averages, CPU usage and temperature, battery status, RAM and disk usage. In addition, it shows networking details, including the internal network IP address and the IP address assigned to the outside-facing router the network uses to connect to the wider world and current inbound and outbound network connections. The IP address is assigned by the ISP and it changes. So if you try to attack, example, Jay's home network using it, you will find that the IP address is being used by someone else now. There is a lot of information in a small space. This setup is not as pretty as some that you'll see, but nearly all of which you have has setup details made freely available by the person who wrote the configurations. And for you techies who are listening and find this easy to grasp, you can run Conky from the command line at any time after it is set up. To make it more convenient, many people choose to keep their config files in their /home directory somewhere and then write a script with a custom location. And there are other graphical system and process monitoring tools that come with Ubuntu, including the following. VNC Viewer, AT&T's open source remote session manager, part of the XVNC package, which you can use to view and run a remote desktop session locally. Another worth mentioning is GNOME NetTool, a GNOME system developed tool that enables system administrators to carry out a wide range of diagnostics on network interfaces, including port scanning and root tracing. And the third worth mentioning is Wireshark, a graphical network protocol analyzer that can be used to save or display packet data in real time and has intelligent filtering to recognize data signatures or patterns from a variety of hardware and data captures from third-party database capture programs, including compressed files. Some protocols include AppleTalk, Andrew File System or AFS, AOL's Instant Messenger, various Cisco protocols, and many, many more. And I'll now go over the KDE process and system monitoring tools. KDE provides several process and system monitoring clients, integrates the KDE graphical clients into the desktop taskbar by right-clicking the taskbar and following the menus. These KDE monitoring clients include the following: KDF, a graphical interface to your system's file system table that displays free disk space and enables you to mount and unmount file systems with a pointing device. And two is KSYS-GUARD, another panel applet that provides CPU load and memory use information in animated graphics. And then there's enterprise server monitoring. Servers used in enterprise situations require extreme uptime. It is beyond the scope of this program to discuss it, so all I'll do is tell you a little bit about it. However, there are a couple of tools we wanted to mention to help an enterprise system admin get started. The first is Landscape. Canonical, the company that finances much of the Ubuntu development, has a monitoring service incorporated into its proprietary fee-based system administrating tool, Landscape. Landscape has a special dashboard that gives monitoring information and creates an interface for managing multiple Ubuntu systems, easily including Ubuntu, Enterprise Cloud, and Amazon EC2 installations. For more information, see https://land-scapeconical.com/. And another one I can mention here of top quality monitoring tools that is available would be ZENOSS and NAGIOS. And you can take a look at that at https://help.ubuntu.com/community/SERBERS#MONITORING. And other references I can provide here would be http://and.SOURCEFORGE.net, and that is the homepage for SourceForge. SourceForge has a lot of things that you can find there. Another one would be Wireshark, www.wireshark.org/, and that would be the homepage for Wireshark. Well, that's our program for today. Our next program will be about backing up your Ubuntu operating system. In this upcoming program, you'll learn how to choose a backup strategy, choose backup hardware and media. We'll also discuss how to use backup software and a whole lot more. If you enjoyed listening to this program, please tell a friend, and by all means, leave us a comment. Your feedback is important to us. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email us at linuxguyguru@gmail.com. You can also check out our website at linuxguy.guru, where you'll find more information about Linux. Knowledge is power. Learning Linux is a must in these challenging and turbulent times where our internet freedom and personal sovereignty are being threatened by prying eyes. In future shows, I will cover topics that even Edward Snowden never talked about. So I encourage everyone to continue listening to this program. And should you be in the New York City area and would like to convert your personal computer to a Linux-based operating system, we can make it a reality with a variety of over a dozen Linux-based operating systems to choose from. The possibilities are endless. In closing, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to today's program. Till next time, your host, Jay Benjamin, logging out.
Thank you.